eats down is that in some way we are all kind of doing drag, because drag is is a performance of gender, and we all get dressed and perform our version of gender, because gender is a social construct. So yeah, absolutely, you put yourself on display every day, some more than others for sure, but yeah, everyone should get to perform themselves and tap into an art in that way. I also like what you said about growing up in a black family training you, and I've never thought about it, but
it's absolutely so true.
It's not so much that black people are just naturally gifted. My dad used to make me sit in the car, and he would sing the words to Sam Cooke to me and make me sing it back in key. In key. And he would just, I had to remember the lyrics. I had to sing it in the exact, and Sam Cooke.
Oh, man.
Sam Cooke has a voice. So
remembering the lyrics is the thing. Like, I remember, because my whole life I've been listening to music. Like, I grew up listening to music. My family was all we did was listen to music. And every car ride, whatever, and it was always a driver, because what? Don't touch a black man's radio. And so, you know, it's always like what they want to listen to. And I remember, like, my whole family would sing songs, and I'm trying to get the lyrics right, and the minute I stepped off, they'd be like, hey, I fixed what the fuck.
All of a sudden it turned into Joe Jackson from the Jackson 5.
Call me a switchboard.
But yeah, like, the enjoyment, I mean, I've definitely come from, DJ Queen knows this, I come from a party of, a family of what? Partiers.
Strong.
Everybody in my family, and it's funny, like, I laugh about it, because I'm like, y'all think I just came out this way? You look crazy. I partied all forever. Like, so partying, listening to music, dancing. Like, I remember being really worried about the way I was dancing when I was, like, in middle school. My parents were like, just practice. That's what you do. You get in the mirror, you practice. But you need to know how to dance. Like, you know? And
you
obviously
need to be on time.
No, on beat is necessary. Now, obviously, I learned how to dance. I'm a much better dancer at raves, but because no one cares. But, you know.
Like, one of my earliest memories was my cousin Tanya being like, yeah, Kai, get it. Because I'm on the floor popping my little non-existent booty to bad. I want to sex you up. And, like, and, you know, that I feel like I see people talk a lot about how colonized we are in the way that we kind of slut shame, you know, black femmes, especially, like, the way we dance and stuff like that. But, like, they say trauma is stored in the hips, right? Like, we are popping your booty isn't just about attracting a man. Popping your booty is about releasing that stress. Is I think that you know, there is a lot of science too to back up that dancing can be just as effective as SSRIs in treating depression in
absolutely.
You know, there's something there, right? Like, there's something that's suppressing us, that's keeping us tight and locked in, and when we can allow ourselves to be free, when we can shake our ass, when we can, like, move our bodies, then, like, that is healing us in ways that we're not even fully aware of. So, like, you know, as black people, like, I think that we should all get out there, especially nowadays, and shake our ass.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because thank you, live audience. Live audience, say hey.
Yes.
Hey. There you go. And so it's funny because a couple weeks ago, me and DJ Queen were, like, talking about our post festival, you know, experience that we had, because she came out to a festival with me in San Diego.
It was crazy.
Two days.
Great time.
She lasted one day. I did 2 days.
Yeah, I was only.
I'm not really sure if I'm still alive or not. This may just be a weird purgatory. But anyway, I talked about the, like, it dawned on me for the first time in all these years. I've been raving since I was 18, that, like, when I'm at raves, it's almost like a form of worship, because I am, like, dancing, moving my body in ways that, like, I'm just really connected with the universe and beyond. And I think that, like, is so important to us, as you recognize just the history of dance, a history of movement in black bodies, and being restricted in ways has not helped us in any form of fashion. And it's like, yeah, like, you know, we've always been kind of moving our hips through dance and stuff. And I'm like, if you're sexualizing a kid over that, that's kind of on you. Like, that's not, that's not what I'm not doing that for. That I'm doing it to express myself, you know.
Yeah, black people have oftentimes found freedom and liberation in music and dance. Like, even the dance of cumbia is a dance that is rooted, that came from slaves, that was that was done in Colombia, and the way they dance is their feet don't go that wide because they had shackles on, but they're still moving, the hips are still flowing, and it's, like, all part of that. So dance is incredibly important. I always say that I don't As I get older, I don't care what kind of mobility I lose. I always want to be able to dance salsa.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, and I will always be on the sidewalk.
As long as you're in the room.
As long as you're in the room.
As long as you're in the room. Thing. You know, yeah, you just do your little two-step over there. That's all you need.
For those who don't know, salsa is probably one of my least favorite activities.
It's crazy.
There's just a lot of touching and movement, and it's a lot. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Anyways, what?
I'll maybe circle back to dancing, being able to do drag back at Tinkers really helped me get in touch with so many different parts of myself. I was a straight woman when I moved to California, and now I am a non-binary, trans, mass, bisexual, pansexual, omnisexual, whatever. I don't really care. I say bisexual mostly because I like the colors better on that flag.
Does not look good. I like the bisexual flag more.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know what, guys? As an ally, I agree.
Thank you.
And everyone's like, what?
How would you describe, because not everyone can see me, but how would you describe what I'm wearing right now?
You look very gay.
Today?
You look very gay
Like homosexually gay.
Homosexually gay. Yeah. Okay, right.
Yeah,
right.
You just...
Today, yeah. Is it today like a 10 or is it like a 5?
I mean, like I always say, you look like you eat pussy as a job.
Right. I am well aware. Yeah. Like before I walked in here, I just... What's up, dude? You know?
The most ally of ally to where sometimes I'm like, you're this close to being in the community. Right. You kind of like are.
We're trying to figure out where, what letter.
But I also think queerness is a political identity. I think you can absolutely. I give her the sell every time. I was like, I would identify you as queer. I think it's political.
Well, guys, I'm part of the queue.
I think the way you live your life also breaks a lot of heteronormative norms. And I think that is within itself the queer identity.
Within
that box.
Being the only heteronormative things about me is my attraction to men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know anything else.
Yeah.
You know?
And we're all there.
And we all equally hate it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Why?
Every day I wake up and I'm like, am I sure I don't like that?
Yeah.
Fuck, I don't. Yeah. All right, well, men? Okay, but let's get into this next musical break. What are you playing first?
I'm going to play Get Up Off That Thing.
Oh, yeah. And to all the other shaman out there, Get Up Off That Thing. It's not worth it.
All right. Ow!
I'm back. Get up off of that thing and dance with you better. Get up off of that thing and dance with you. Sing it now. Get up off of that thing and dance with you better. Get up off of that thing and try to release that pressure. Get up off of that thing and shake the you. Yeah.
You are to me, and I suffer a bit on a Mike.
And we're here with Black on Black on Black. What was that last song called, DJ Queen?
Oh, that last song was I Just Want to Be Your Everything by Andy Gibb.
Wow, that's awful. Your everything?
The to food? Be fair,
that was actually
your water?
That was actually not the song I was trying to play, and then I was like, uh-oh. That song is great. But yeah, you're here with DJ Queen, myself, D Fantastic, and our lovely guest,
Kai Kai B. Michael.
And our live audience.
Hey!
So we're trying out a new segment before we hop into this next piece called Oh Devania.
Yeah, let's get this.
Embarrassing things happen to me all the time. This weekend, probably the most embarrassing that's ever happened to me.
I know,
ever.
You won't tell me. What happened?
Okay, so Saturday morning, I woke up hungover because, you know, whatever. I like to party. Again, I am from Texas. Like, and so, you know, I'm like, all right, I'm going to go get food. Like, what do I want? I'm going to go to get, like, Chipotle. I don't know. I was in the mood for that. Whatever. So I get a little stoned. I go to Chipotle, okay? Now, I can't decide between two different types of things I want. I want a bowl and I want a burrito because I'm high. So I'm high, like, telling people, hey, I want the burrito bowl and, like, the chicken, but actually, like, can we stay with the, like, you know, the fucking regular burrito? And they're looking at me like, bitch, it's like 10 a.m. Why are you stoned? It's very obvious. So as I'm walking through there, take me through there, and we get to the end, and I'm like, I need some water because I'm gonna have mad cotton mouth. So this dude puts all of that shit in one bag, right? Okay, fine. And I was like, I grab the bag, immediately it breaks, falls straight to the ground, right? And I'm like, oh my god, what the fuck? Now I'm gonna preface this, okay? Since the beginning of this year, I lost about 10 pounds, right? Yes, great, fantastic. As I proceed to bend down and pick up the bag of food, my pants fell straight to the ground. Yeah! And if anyone doesn't know me, I fucking don't wear no commando.
You don't wear underwear.
They saw all the ass, all the lips. The lips that grip, baby, were out. Just, hey, everybody. No one gets to talk to me ever.
Were you wearing a long shirt or were you wearing a crop top?
I was like, sure, don't matter. My ass is thick. My shit was out, my guy. So I'm high as fuck. Picking up a broken ass bag, my pants are on the ground, everybody can see my shit. I'm looking at the Chipotle people all wearing black, like, no. And there's a line behind me. So I grab my pants, pick them up, and I'm like, I'm so sorry. I grab the bag again, it shit falls again. It explodes, basically.
Yo, so I left it there.
I grab my pants up, and I'm like, doing this, I'm so sorry. And I like hold it like a newborn child, because obviously it's fucking breakable. And I run straight out to my car. When I tell you, I got in the car, and like, I just like wanted to cry, but I laughed so hard. Because that was truly the most embarrassing thing that has happened to me in my entire fucking life. So,
I mean, going through shit like that while you're high is horrendous.
Of course, I was high as fuck. I was high as hell.
Because everything just takes longer.
Oh, hold on. Actually, I didn't rush straight to the car. I went to get napkins and, like, fucking utensils. So I'm holding my pants in a bag and, like, grabbing utensils before I ran out.
Yo, you had the gall to stay and grab resources?
It don't matter. Everyone saw my which way or what? Everybody knew me from the ground up, my guy. It don't matter.
People were like, something ain't right about that.
Oh, no.
I can't put my hand on. I can't say crack because I don't know.
No,
crack.
It's not crack. Like, but that's definitely
something going on.
Anyway, so I would never go to Chipotle again. I needed that.
Was it the one that we went to by the nail salon?
No, thank God.
Oh, thank God, because that's your regular one, right?
No. Yeah,
that was a non-regular one.
It doesn't matter. I think that was my wake up call to be like, Devania, what the fuck are you doing? So, anyways, that's our OD fantastic moment.
You know what kind of sucks about that? You have such a distinct look that they're.
Oh, yeah.
If they see you again, they're going to be like, yo.
Had her ass out? Oh, yeah. I truly, that was one of the worst things that ever happened to me.
Wow.
And that was on Saturday morning.
Oh, my God.
So that's
Okay. That's our very first try of the embarrassing stories that happened at D-Fantastic. But let's actually jump back into what the hell we're talking about.
Okay, so segment two is going to be just diving a little bit deeper into like Bay Area and politics and how and surrounding that in drag, right? Mm-hmm. So, Kai Kai, we know that you've done drag all over the Bay Area. How have you felt your performance has been received in different pockets? Because there's so many subcultures vibes within the Bay. San Jose culture is very different than Oakland culture. It was very different than San Francisco culture. Have you felt a difference in sort of the reception to it or just the general vibe, depending on the area?
I feel like I do in that I try my best to stay tapped into audiences. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do feel like I am... I'm a performer who is happy to adapt. So, like, I try my best to kind of use the knowledge that I have, the knowledge base that I have. I've been doing drag for 13 years. So, also, like, you know, things change over time as well.
Right? Sure, absolutely.
The reception of me, depending on, like, you know, the fact that, like, I've won a pageant, like, you know, that kind of stuff. Versus, like, when I first started, I was new. People might not have received AFAB drag performers the same way, you know, back... over 10 years ago. So I do think that, like, San Jose and San Francisco, for example, can be very different in that I feel more comfortable as a performer taking risks in San Francisco than I do in San Jose.
Right.
I feel also comfortable taking risks in Oakland, but also, like, there are a lot of ways I feel like I can do stuff in Oakland that may be authentic to me that maybe I would feel like would be received less good, like less well in San Francisco. Or
that doesn't surprise me.
Right, exactly. Because like there's a lot more black people. Honestly, one of the main reasons why I moved to Oakland is like, okay, I'm ready to be around black people again.
When me and my husband were looking for a house, we were like, because we lived in the peninsula at the time, and I was like, first of all, where the fuck am I going to get my hair done? Yeah. And I was like, you know, because we wanted kids and we have a kid now, I was like, we need to be around more black people. Like, that is extremely important to me. I'm from Houston. That is a black fucking city. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't be like constantly looking and like lacking that. You know, it affects your mentality.
Yeah.
Let alone, you know, depressed black girl hair day.
Oh, bro.
Like, I can't have. Yeah. I need the most access as possible to get my hair done.
Yeah, bro. I don't need to be struggling when I'm already struggling.
No extra struggles. Absolutely.
But that's exactly how I described my move to Oakland. I was like, I need to live around a variety of black people, and I need to see black people thriving in all fonts, not just one font. And so, move my black ass right on to Oakland because I needed that kind of community. So I feel you on that.
Yeah, because I moved here. You know, I moved here from Detroit. I grew up in the '90s in Detroit, and you know, the crime statistics don't fucking lie. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I grew up hearing drive-bys. Like, you know, and, like, I grew up knowing, like, people who, like, died in horrible shootings and stuff like that. And, like, you know, so when I moved here, you know, very much diagnosed with CPTSD.
Yeah.
Us anxious baddies representing.
So anxious. I'm so anxious.
Yeah.
That's why I'm drinking.
Yeah. Right, so, like, you know, I moved here, and I moved to, like, I mean, I spent some time in, like, Hayward and Fremont, too, but, like, I mostly was in San Jose for the first little bit. In San Jose, I went from, like, the most dangerous city in the United States to, like, pretty much the safest.
In the
early 2000s.
Yeah.
Or the early aughts. So, like, I was happy. I was chilling. I moved up to, like, the peninsula. Mm-hmm. I worked for the Santa Clara School District for a good 5 years. So, like, I was very comfy. And then, you know, it got to a point where I was like, okay, I'm ready to be a little bit less comfy. Moved to San Francisco. Was in San Francisco for a good, like, 5 years. And then at the beginning of 2021, moved to Oakland. Mm-hmm. So I made a full circuitous route around the Bay. And honestly, like, am so happy where, you know, being where I am.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do perform in San Francisco a lot. I spend a lot of time in the city. I work in this. I say I'm as much a part of San Francisco culture and life as I am Oakland.
Yeah.
Like, they're, you know, they're to me, it's all one big city, personally.
Yeah.
I wish, you know, more people thought that way, then maybe they'd come across the bridge to see my shows in Oakland.
East Bay people do not go across the bridge. San Francisco people do not leave their neighborhood.
They do not
leave their neighborhood.
It's so crazy because I'm from Houston. I'm like, driving an hour to see your friend was kind of a thing.
Houston is crazy.
I will never forget. We were leaving someplace in Houston. And Brittany and DJ Queen was like, hey, yeah, like, we're going to go to this bar. I'm like, yeah. And then as we were like getting ready to hop in, I was like, hey, so I want to tell you this, because if I don't tell you, you're going to be like hella mad. I was like, the Uber ride to this bar is 45 minutes
away. I was like, that's crazy.
Well, I was taking it to the gayborhood, and I was like, yeah, like, we got to do this, so yeah. Suck it up, buttercup.
And you're still in Houston. Like, yeah. Here in the Bay Area, 45 minutes, bro, you didn't cross through, like, three different cities.
No, it's all Houston.
It's all three different neighborhoods.
Houston just doesn't stop.
Yes. You didn't pass over hella different bars, hella different gay neighborhoods now.
It's insane.
No. It's
literally insane.
So, for you, Kai Kai, I wanted to know, like, have you always implemented politics in your drag? Now, personally, I would argue that, like, as a black person, a black woman, our very existence is political. But, like, I kind of wanted to hear your first thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think I have. I feel like it was just kind of a part of... because I look at drag as a medium for self-expression.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've always been very politically aware. Therefore, politics was always bound to be a part of my drag.
Right.
Drag is political. Being in the skin is political. So, it just... there was kind of no option for me. But the first thing I can think of that I really did that was just like really political was there was a protest show. Gosh, I don't remember many details about it, but my friend Lysol put on the show would know all of the details. But yeah, there was a protest show. So I like did this political number and I was like, ooh, this feels good. Like I really wanted to like keep going and keep doing stuff like that. So, you know, I do whatever feels good in the moment. And also, drag is a reflection of popular culture. It's a reflection of culture in general. Like, we're speaking on culture. We're speaking on, you know, the performance of gender, etc. So, you know, I feel like it just seemed like a natural thing to do political numbers for me. Can I talk about one that was very controversial
I was going to ask if you have a highlight reel of performances. Yeah.
So this was 2015, 2016.
As it should be.
I did a number, Britney Spears, I'm a Slave for You.
Mm.
I did it as like a sexy or cute, like I started off in a Klan hood.
Yes, absolutely. And
I gave a lap dance to someone dressed as Donald Trump.
I'm sorry. That's amazing.
This is like amazing. I said, this was like 2015, 2016,
highest level creativity.
Yeah. That's amazing.
What I was doing was, for me, obviously, I'm a leftist. It was on the nose for me. But at the time, I think it was still controversial, you know, because like Donald Trump wasn't Donald Trump yet. He wasn't what we conceive of him.
He was just the you know, the weird reality TV show host, that sort of thing.
Which is crazy because he was that already.
Everyone knew.
But it's like everyone knew, but everyone didn't know. Like people didn't really understand at that time, like how much of a threat he was, and like I think that's, you know, I don't want to get too much into the leftist infighting of it all, but...
Oh, yeah,
you know,
we can talk about that all day.
I knocked doors for Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, I was very much in it, and I was, like, seeing how... I was watching the progression of, like... I was watching CNN when they were, like, not covering the Bernie rally and watching Trump's empty podium instead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I watched Donna Brazile, a black woman, give that fucking election to Donald Trump because they thought that it would help Hillary win to elevate him and ignore Bernie.
Right.
Even though Bernie had the momentum, Bernie had the policy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. Yep. So... I was watching this stuff out of frustration for people on my own quote unquote side of the aisle, where like I'm just like, y'all are gonna make Trump win because you're fucking idiots and you want this woman.
You're infighting.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I knew what she did to Haiti. Like, I knew what Bill Clinton did to my community as a person who grew up in the... I was born in 88. Mm-hmm. So I was fully sentient for pretty much the entirety of the 90s.
Oh, sure,
And even though I wasn't politically aware as a small child, I could see what was happening to my community, what the crime bill did to my community. You know what I mean? So, like, when I grew up and I became more politically aware, I could connect the dots
100%.
Of things that happened to me specifically. I also watched Obama be Obama. Mm-hmm. I watched Joe Biden be Joe Biden. I was a victim of Joe Biden's blocking of busing initiatives, right? Like, I grew up in Detroit in the fucking hood, and I went to shit-ass schools because there were busing initiatives that were supposed to take some of us out of the city into the suburbs so that we can integrate, because it was a very segregated area even in the 90s and early 2000s.
Right.
So, like, I'm watching all of this neoliberal fuckery, and I'm seeing, like, everything that's happened in the past 10 years, I'm like, I fucking called that shit in 2015.
Yeah.
So, like, I hate it, because being a leftist really is being correct too early.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, I've said many different things over the past years, one of them being... my, like, you know, vehement distaste for Israel, and this has been for decades, you know, and obviously anything that we say on Radio Valencia is our own opinions and not the opinion of Radio Valencia, but, like, I have had major issues with Israel for a really long time, and it feels like only in the last, like, 3 years or so has it really been like, oh, it's an issue. It's like, what the hell? Like, it is so common, but I mean, you know, and we enter our next musical break in a minute, but one thing that I fully believe has been an issue amongst leftists and Democrats is that, like, we are so adamant about being right that our compromising is so low, and the unfortunate reality of it is that propaganda that leads to feelings of fear and hate and anxiety are a lot stronger drivers to actually being politically engaged than, like, you know, like, being like, oh, well, you know, maybe, whatever. And that unfortunately, the right has its beat on that.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't want to, like, you know, no one wants to be driven to complete and utter fear to make decisions. But, like, that has happened so, like, so obviously for a really long time. So it's very frustrating, but that is, I've been saying that for years. I'm like, their ability to stoke the fires of hate coupled with the anti-intellectualism so that people can't even critically analyze where the hate comes from. Immediate reaction. Of course I'm going to vote. Of course I'm going to do this, because if you're telling me if I don't do this, then they're going to come and get me and take my guns. And it's like, well, okay. But, like, then for us, we're like, well, you know, this is how we solve immigration. And it's like, okay, can we focus? Can we get together a little bit? Like, it's frustrating, but
yeah.
Absolutely.
Should we get into our next musical break?
Yes,
and then we can
exactly.
go to our last segment?
Yeah. I'm very excited to talk about this last segment. This
should be
fun.
Me too.
All right.
For this last segment, I mean, for this first song, I have Fight the Power by Public Enemy.
Yeah.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
Fight the power! Fight the power! Fight the power!
obvious, he's straight out racist. The sucker was simple and plain.
Motherfucking in John Wayne.
Cause I'm black and I'm proud.
Already
I'm hyped cause I'm amped. Most of my heroes don't appear in no stamp. Sample, look back, you look and find nothing but rednecks for 400 years if you check.
Don't worry, be happy.
Was a number one jam. Damn if I said you could slap me right here. Get it.
Let's get this party started right.
Right on.
Come on.
What we got to say.
Yeah.
Power to the people, no delay. Make everybody see. In order to fight the powers that be. Fight the power.
Check this out, man.
Okay, talk to me about the future of Public Enemy.
Future of Public Enemy got a...
And we're back with Black on Black on Black. You're here with Big D.
Fantastic.
Yep. And?
Yep. DJ Queen, bro. That's, oh my God, why are you so... Big D! Why are you rushing? Take your time.
I'm, you
take
know,
your time.
I'm an aggressive nigga. Maybe I just want to be in that shit real
fast,
real quick. You know?
I feel that. Be in it.
I don't have all day. You know, but let me get up in it.
But we do.
Well, not you. But
no.
I want to be clear. The audience may not realize. No, not that. I'm just saying.
I love how much you're trying to. You just automatically start defending your straightness so fast
because it gets misconstrued.
Like a person deep in the closet, like I'm straight. I of course
because I make mad jokes and it used to be like all right, and then it wasn't. I moved from Texas to here and everyone's like wait, and I'm like nah, dude. I just like to tell jokes.
Jokes is aggressive
because it's funny. You know, it's like when straight guys are like oh, let me grab your balls. Like that's just hilarious.
Yeah, and a lot of them are kind of in the closet.
You think so?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was horrible.
Hey, and usually them niggas is in the closet. Mm-hmm.
So the guys, they're
making the joke because they're like, maybe we should just like touch each other.
The straight guys who are like playing grab ass are normally in the closet.
Closeted bisexuals.
Yeah, what are we doing?
Well, I just need to know for my own ideas.
You know what? I look forward to throwing your party one day. It's going to be great. We're going to celebrate. Awesome. Pride is going to be amazing. We're going to do it, babes.
Yeah. Right.
Do it.
Right. Because, you know, one day when it does happen, you know, like God knows if it happens during June, you know, I may die.
We're going to be missing for a minute.
Devon is coming out parties during June might actually kill people.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's safe. Anyways, just a reminder, we have an amazing guest on. Kai Kai B. Michaels, I'm so sorry. We just went off on a tangent. So one thing that Kai Kai kind of told us recently was about this thing called solar punk. So I kind of want to break that down for a second before we dive into these questions we have. This is awesome. As a punk fan, you know, I'd never heard of this, which I was like, God, I'm getting fucking old. Maybe I'm just, I don't know. I'm untapped. So, anyway, solar punk is a creative and social movement that imagines a hopeful, yay, sustainable future where humans live in harmony with nature and each other, blending elements of science fiction, art, and activism. It emphasizes renewable energy, definitely solar power, obviously, and rejects pessimistic kind of like, oh no, the climate, we're all gonna die sort of thing. Because if y'all don't know, yeah, the Earth will not die, but we will. Anyways, so this is avoiding that. The punk aspect reflects its kind of countercultural roots, including, you know, do-it-yourself ethics, anti-consumerism, and a push towards post-capitalist and community-driven ways of living. So when we get into, like, literary and artistic genres, solar punk kind of explores, like, what the world could look like if humanity kind of just, like, stopped being terrible and addressed major challenges to climate change, pollution, you know, inequality, socially and beyond. It often serves as a counterpoint to dystopian genres like cyberpunk. While cyberpunk is like, you know, major capitalistic, high-tech, oppressive environment, solar punk's like, no, we kind of just stopped doing all that.
you know, technology is more of a tool for coexistence and enabling sustainability, right? And stronger communities rather than just like the opposite, cyberpunk. The movement is grounded in both philosophy and practice. It promotes renewable energy, local food systems, and cooperative living, often through real-world applications like eco-villages and makerspaces. So solarpunk embraces kind of a balance of high-tech innovation and low-tech sustainability, encouraging people to grow their food, share resources, and design systems that prioritize environmental and social well-being. It's really cool because you have these stories and ideas that kind of highlight inclusivity and social equity while also collecting, you know, just wanting everyone to kind of have a better and brighter future. What's really cool is that visually and culturally, solarpunk stands out for its bright, nature-integrated aesthetic. When you think of like cyberpunk, it's always like dark, grimy, lots of concrete, lots of just electricity. This is like
neon lights.
Yes, this is more green, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to see your buildings, but it's not just, it's mostly greenery around you, and like your access to the sunlight is important. And so there's a lot of flowing designs, harmonious urban spaces. And this has emerged in a response to the kind of the dominance of the bleak dystopian stuff that we see. We've seen in movies for forever. You know, this is like, no, actually, we can avoid this, right? So I think it's really cool. So I think that's kind of like the breakdown of solarpunk that once I got into it, I was like, oh, this is really fantastic. Something that I think more movies and media should do. But I think, you know, like, I know you looked over and you're like, you had questions that you kind of wanted to explore.
Well, I was curious, Kaikai, from your point of view, is there anything that you would go into off of what Dee said, or where did you first even learn about
solarpunk?
Yeah, I learned from it. I learned about it just, you know, being chronically online.
As we all are.
Right? And, like, you know, just kind of swimming around in these pools of, like, subcultures, like, aesthetic subcultures and stuff. So, solarpunk, I think, like, the main bit of aesthetics that people use is a Chobani commercial.
I
love Chobani.
It tastes chalky.
Yogurt. What's up with the yogurt, right? Do you mix it before you? I love it, so I'm very confused.
So there's a Chobani commercial that shows a perfect example of what solarpunk is or what it could be, because it's like a woman, and it's a brown woman kind of homesteading. She's got land, but also there's like robots and there's tech that's helping to tend to the land.
Yeah.
There's her child is going to school and she's making a breakfast with just like a bounty of veggies and stuff like that comes from the land. And like you see off in the distance, there's a city. It's still a city, but it's very Art Deco looking. There are organic kind of shapes to the buildings. There's public transit off in the distance and stuff. And there's not a lot of that kind of media out right now. My, you know, tinfoil hat opinion is because if we start to imagine a future like that, then we're going to start working towards a future
like that. I completely agree.
I think that as much as I love cyberpunk, like, if, you know, if you see my outfit today, like, it's cyberpunk. Although this jacket, I feel like, gives it more of a solarpunk.
Well, honestly, when you walked in today, I was like, you know, you look like one of those people that, like, you're not a like an antagonist, you know, you're definitely like almost like an anti-hero where like I buy like weird weapons off of in a video game. Yeah, I was like, no, this is like
the plug.
But you only do it for good things. You're like, oh, you're gonna like blow up the patriarchy. Here, here's all these nukes.
Absolutely.
You know, like I play video games, I was like, oh, but that's actually what's happening.
But I love cyberpunk aesthetics. I love, you know, the cyberpunk franchise, like the video game, the anime. But it does. I'm always talking about framing and like cyberpunk aesthetics and stories. We live in this framing of corporations run everything, and we have to just exist as a foil or a counter to those corporations, and we have to work to dismantle them. What if we start thinking past that? What if we start thinking about what the world would look like after we've disabled the like corporate apparatus that is keeping us oppressed? Like, what are we going to build after that? So like that's kind of what solarpunk is all about, is thinking like long term. And you know, there's some, because I feel like the new Fiona and Cake, the Adventure Time offshoot, gives a little bit of solarpunk too, where it's like it's a little run down, it's a little grimy, but there's still life and vibrance there, you know, because like there's just things are overgrown or things are, they're making do with what they have. And that, I feel like that also ties back to like Black American culture to make it to really put a nice little bow on it, is like, you know, if you look at what voodoo is, like, it's all rooted in making do with what you have 100%. In order to achieve a higher, like, standard of living or your higher self. And I think that we could do that. Like, it's not that in a solar punk future there will be no plastic, because plastic exists and it's going to be around for a long time. So we will find ways to, you know, reduce, reuse, recycle. Like, we're going to find ways to incorporate that plastic in a way that, like, maybe we'll have, like, certain polymer coatings that will make it so that microplastics don't shed, so we can use it longer or something like that, right?
Sure. Like, it's giving me, like, major do you watch the anime Gachi Okuto?
Yes, absolutely.
What you're talking about is giving me sorry for our audience who's like, what did you just say? It is an anime that is set in sort of this dystopian world that's centered around trash, and it's really about, there are people who can take objects and turn them into, like, not weapons, but things that are imbued with magic.
Yeah.
And there's a society that lives above the earth, and they dump all their trash onto earth. And so there's people living down there, and they are finding interesting ways to work with technology, but they are really invested still in the earth. They haven't discarded it.
Right.
So when you were giving that sort of picture of, like, you know, being in the field, tending to the field and using, and still technology, I actually was curious, like, because I was wondering if solar punk is devoid of technology or antagonistic to it. It doesn't sound like it.
No.
It's like actually using technology not in a very consumerist way, but finding a harmonious way where it actually does enhance life, not detracts from anybody's life.
Right. Like, when I was really diving into this and doing research on it, like, one thing that I kept thinking about is, like, picking fruit.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, I have a lot of fruit trees in my backyard. Like, I just can't even get to it that often. But it's like, if you had technology that could provide that, I mean, you could provide just so much food just off the fact that it doesn't stop. But that's an example of, like, what is technology that can help things be harmonious and not detract from, like, what people actually need or want to be doing, you know?
Yeah, that's why I care so much about politics, because, like, AI is such a hot button issue. Like, I don't use AI, but there is potential in AI, because so much of what we call AI is just machine learning.
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
It's just shit that, like, that's just how technology works. Yeah. And, like, but they're branding it this way because it's all this weird fucking vibes-based, like, hedge fund fucking
trendy
bullshit.
Words.
Yeah, yeah, that's, like, destroying the planet. Mm-hmm. But if we can have decent policy, if our politicians can go to Congress, if they can, like, legislate on a smaller level, too, in a way that keeps us in mind, that keeps humans and our livelihoods in mind, then what we will do is we will make sane policy that puts guardrails on technology so that it's not destroying the planet, so that it's fucking useful to us. Like, you want your phone to be regulated so it's not blowing up in your hand. You want your phone to be regulated so that it works day in and day out.
Yeah.
We want AI to be regulated. We want machine learning to be regulated so that it is serving a good purpose.
I also don't want AI to starve us creatively. Like, I don't want AI to design my poster. I don't want AI to come up with a jingle. I want AI to create more space for human beings to be creative about how we can take care of each other and how we can provide joy to each other. Instead of someone being lazy and being like, I want AI to create this thing so I don't have to do it.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, and then it ripping off somebody else's art, because it's not AI doing that.
No.
AI is just going on and finding somebody else's art and not paying them in copyright.
And taking it.
The AI can be in your robots that work as a disability accommodation.
Right.
Maybe you have arthritis and you can't go out and pick all that fruit.
Yep. Right.
So the AI can be able to say, hey, this fruit is ripe, let me pick it and take it to the house. Then you can cook it.
Right.
Yeah. You're still cooking the food.
Yep.
You're still eating, consuming the food. You're still, like, figuring out what to do with it. The AI is literally just there to help you achieve that goal. Like, that's what technology should be doing. That's 100%. What technology up to this point had been doing. And, like, you know, then corporations get involved and they make everything fucking worse.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Do you feel like you ever incorporate any solar punk themes into your drag at all?
Yeah, I'm trying to a lot more lately, but, like, it is a very niche, small, new subculture. So, like, I guess the thing that I'm trying to do is, like, just talk about it, just like for people who've never heard of it.
You've educated me, and I was super excited to, like, dive into some more about it. I was like, no. I mean, especially because, like, I'm a hobby writer, and I often think about very bleak things, and it's like, well, like, actually, there's just another opportunity to kind of, like, do this, but, like, you know, think of just a different way of the future, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
Yeah, I think so many things, I'm, like, I would love to start kind of like, I'm working on starting like a video series or like, you know, maybe just a series of TikToks or what. I'm not sure exactly the format, but like, I want to talk about it. So right now I'm just kind of in a phase of like ideating on like, what does it look like? What is it? Like, what are the aesthetics? Cause that's what draws me to a lot of subcultures is like what it looks like, but also like, what are the details of it? I have a folder on Instagram that's like, you know, solar punk, where I'm just saving stuff that I feel like is kind of solar punk, like people upcycling their clothes and like thrifting some stuff and then just like adding stuff to it, like technically that's solar punk. We're it's a group project, so we all have to like be aware that we're doing the project in order to get started on it.
So what you're saying, the pants that fell off me the other day, I could upcycle them somehow.
You put some grommets in there, corset lacing.
The belt will not make it look as fucking dope, my guy.
If you hear this, like the nice
corset lacing on the side,
look at that, cinch it together. This could be so cute. This could be really fucking cute.
No. It will, because I can't have that happen again. I refuse to underwear. It's never gonna happen. So we have about 8 minutes left, and I kind of want to get into some like some funnier, you know, questions, because of course, why not? If the apocalypse happened right now, both y'all and myself, what would be your useful skill that would keep other humans from killing you?
I mean, is the apocalypse not happening? Like, I feel like even at this point, like, I'm sitting here talking about all my useful skills that's keeping people from not killing me. I'm valuable, guys. I swear. I have good ideas. I know about stuff. I'm feeding homeless people.
Absolutely. I mean, my answer has to be I am a convincer.
I thought you were going to say telling jokes, and I'm like,
nigga,
no.
Come on. No. I'm going to be in someone's ear like Grima, like Worm. Like, I'm going to be in that shit. I will convince people. Yeah. I will be finessing myself through that shit. I can't help it. I'm in public relations. I have a degree in rhetoric. That is the only thing I can do right now.
I'm a good project manager. Like, if you need a bunch of different moving pieces put together from someone who's not going to be biased about it, and that's actually going to, and considering the amount of trust that people tend to give black women in those situations.
And the apocalypse?
You think our just rationale and our sense of being just disappears? It evolves, but we still hold on to things that we had preconceptions about.
Look,
if you give me a task to do and you need someone who's going to be able to organize people, I got that.
I don't know, y'all. I think that would not be. I'd be like, we can't keep you, bro.
There's nothing saying that I'm going to be part of your tribe.
What the fuck?
I'm just saying.
Project manager is unimportant to me.
I think you need to convince your ass that it is. Here we are. What's killing you?
But I definitely, this is what I want to ask. In your post-apocalyptic world, what's going to be your fit?
Do you have a skill there? All the skills.
Yeah, all the skills.
I'm researching everybody.
I can fight if you need me to. Like, let me know.
Exactly. Yeah.
You are a good shot, too. You didn't mean
I'm an,
that.
No, I'm an excellent shot. Yeah. Okay. You give me a gun, I'm like, I'm perfect. I am in that bit. I can shoot anything.
I do have nice skills, so I can do that. That's all I got. Weapons.
No. I've got mad range. I've, like, small targets. I am a great shooter. I should have been a sniper. I'm sorry. No.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
Man, you're going to going places.
Sorry, that's not what I meant. Did I?
Yeah, okay, anyways. Well, we did.
So, in the post-apocalyptic world, what's going to be y'all's fit? What y'all wearing every day? What are you rocking on a day-to-day basis? What's the, you know...
I'm rocking a caftan.
A caftan? She's shopping a motherfucking caftan. I know you can do is project manage.
With some leggings underneath. I'm about to be comfortable. You think people are going to care? I'm trying to be comfortable.
Comfortable?
Yeah, I'm going
to have little food. I need your comfortable ass to do something.
Yeah, and I will. If I'm comfortable dress-wise, what? You think I'm going to show up in heels? Wait, what do you want from me?
I'm gonna be the right hand woman to some matriarch or whatever. I'm not wearing a caftan. Okay, caftan.
Because you know why? You know why I would wear a caftan? Because you can hide a lot of things underneath it.
What caftans are you talking about?
I just don't want anyone. I don't want everyone to see if I have weapons on me. I don't want everyone to see if I have resources.
So, okay.
I would wear yes.
Yes. All right. Okay. Sure.
You just a hating ass bitch.
I'm not hating. Anyway, I'm so sorry.
Thank you,
Kai-Kai. Ignore that. Kai-Kai, please, what's your answer?
My fit, I mean, I feel like kind of what I'm wearing now. We're the apocalypse, baby. I'm like, the goal is just to look like an anime character, I think. Yeah. Like, I want to be designed by the people who, you know, designed for, like, Final Fantasy games. yeah. Or Gachi Octa is another yep. one. I'm like, just, like, whatever they would wear, like, yeah, I want to shop at those stores. Like, yeah. Yeah. I feel like, in general, zippers and stuff, like a lot of zippers, once yeah. again going back to Final Fantasy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. No, lots of zippers.
Like, just have. Unnecessary buckleage and strappage and
zippers. Yeah. That makes sense. That makes sense. Okay.
Oh, yeah. No. You don't have to talk.
So I'm going to be wearing all black, like, all the time. Big ass, like, this almost this exact outfit. Like, big ass, like, you know, sweaters and stuff, and like huge pants that are tight on the waist, and lots of ripped up shit, lots of, like, actually I might be with a villain gang, bro. I'm sorry, I'm not on purpose. I just
you gonna be murky niggas? No, what's happening?
I feel like
a villain gang.
What's happening? I feel like I'm describing someone who'd be with a roving gang of, like, wild people, and I realize now maybe that would happen, not on purpose. It wouldn't be on purpose.
Yeah, but
a roving gang.
But you would be aware.
I'd be aware because I'm literally the right hand woman to whoever's the leader, because I can talk to them.
Would be the person convincing the leader to do bad shit.
To make sure,
why are they villains if the convincer
make sure
is
not
to convincing
kill me.
Them?
To make sure not to kill me.
So you're convincing them to kill other people so they don't kill you. You would just be a villain. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I guess so.
That was a long-winded way to say that. I'm the big evil.
Well, not on purpose. I just want to talk my way into this, and then I can't stop. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? Stop talking?
The fact you're talking about it before it happens makes it purposeful. This would not hold up in court.
I just want to be clear. I want to be clear here. I'm only doing it because I feel like we can save the world. You know?
Yeah.
When you say the world, you mean the planet, not the people. Because that's definitely not going to be your objective.
Well, you know, it's just, I feel like villainry can be so misconstrued. Maybe I'm just a villain because no one understands the process of what I'm trying to get to.
I'm seeing the convincing role. That's what I'm seeing.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's what I'm seeing.
I want to make the world a better place by any means necessary.
Killmonger.
Pretty much, bro.
Actually rocked the Killmonger hairstyle for a long time.
You did.
I did. Yeah,
you look great.
But it's not about me. It's about the people.
So
we have a minute and 30 seconds left. Kaikai, is there anything else you want to say before we close out?
Yeah, I feel like at this point my boilerplate is to just be connected to your community, get to know your neighbors. Things are going to get real bad. They're pretty bad right now.
Yeah.
But things are going to get worse. But the good news is there is opportunity. Always find opportunity in the bad and in the worse, right? Like, because I think that as the old world dies, monsters are born, we must all be superheroes and we must all work together to slay those monsters. Sometimes that monster is hunger. Sometimes that monster is an unhoused person who hasn't had someone smile at them in 4 days.
Yeah.
So please just find whatever you can do in your own little world and do that. And try your best to stay tapped in, to stay educated, be open-minded, show people love, show yourself love. If you don't have that love, go find it. There is love out there for you, I promise.
Thank you so much for being here, Kaikai. Thank you so much for our live audience. Yay! We can't wait to do this again. Again, this is Black on Black on Black. We'll be here every 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. The next show is Hell's Kitchen by John Hell. Where are you going to play out with us in the next 20 seconds?
I'm going to play Free Will by Gil Scott Heron.
That's crazy. Yeah. Gil Scott Heron, my boy.
Yeah.
Get it together.
I said, boy, get it together.
Okay. Anyways, thank you so much. Tune back in every Monday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Let's go.
And actually, no, I'm not.
Wow. I'm so sorry, y'all. That was just a land very well. You know what?